Hello, my name is Latrell Allen, and I'd like to welcome you to this podcast episode that focuses on Black women in political leadership. On this episode, we will be following the political career of Ludmilla Love, known to her constituents and the public as Mia Love. Mia Love rose to national prominence after being elected the first Black Republican woman to Congress. The actions of many prominent Republican figures, like President Donald Trump, have led many to see the Republican Party as a party of racists and sexists. With this in mind, many find it hard to comprehend how Love could be a proud member of the Republican Party. Before completing this project, I will be completely honest. I found it bizarre to even think that any woman, let alone a Black woman, could belong to the Republican Party. The party has historically not been diverse in terms of women leaders, let alone Black leaders. The prime example being that it took until 2014 for the party to support and elect its first Black Republican woman to office in a country that has the oldest democracy in the world. After doing this project, though, I have found out something that was made salient throughout the Black Woman in Political Leadership course. That is the fact that the Black woman in leadership at any level or in any capacity is complicated. Their paths to leadership are quite complex and can't use the same lenses that we often use to view men in leadership. A prime example to this is how a Hewlett-Packard internal report found that men apply for a job or promotion when they only meet 60% of the qualifications. But women, on the other hand, apply only after they felt they have met 100% of the qualifications. The competence gap is a huge reality, and there is probably even more studies that need to be done to show how this competence gap impacts women of non-white racial groups disproportionately. This is why I am taking this podcast to highlight the burden of being first. Black women are pioneers by nature, but they take this even a step further by usually being the first or few of women in their fields. Mia Love is no exception. By becoming the first Black Republican woman elected to Congress, she opens the doors for many women after her, even if many see her being Republican and Black woman as a paradox. This podcast will attempt to dissect the paradox of being a Black woman and a Republican while always keeping in mind the struggles placed onto any leadership position where someone is the first to occupy it. Unfortunately, I was unable to get in contact with Love for a one-on-one interview. Instead, what I will attempt to do in this podcast is take clips from her previous interviews on her leadership and shape them into a cohesive work on Love's leadership path. To begin, I start with an interview that Love does with LoveStrong.com magazine, where she talks about women in office.
Is your advice for someone, particularly a woman, who is thinking about running for office? Do you have advice?
There are a lot of people out there who will say, just because you're a woman, I dealt with this a lot, actually, that you're not experienced enough. Even though I had this just well-rounded background in marketing and running a city, I still, when I was running for Congress, just because, I don't know why, but it was just like, well, she doesn't have the experience. Well, I went from not just the legislative branch on the city council, but also the executive branch as a mayor. People will tell you that you're not experienced enough. And I have to say that just living in a place, sending your kids to school, going to the doctor's office, shopping at the local grocery store, putting gas in your car. You have enough experience to know what's going around, to know what to do and how to fix it. So I would say, don't ever let anyone tell you that you're not qualified or you don't have the experience. Because if you find something that you really want to do, that you really want to fix, then lean into that and go for it.
In your opinion, what's also holding women back from executive positions such as governor, the presidency, and or, you know, those kinds of positions in business like CEO or running a company?
Well, I actually there are great women out there that are doing some great things. And I think with what we see on TV, I mean, I'll give you a great example. My kids came with me to see the Black Panther. And it was one of the first times that my daughter said, my favorite scene was when that this man asked this woman who was, they were in a relationship. He asked this woman, would you kill me for your country? And she said, yes. And he bowed in front of her. And she said it was the first time in her lifetime that she recognized women in a role of not just patriotism, but empowerment. Mm-hmm. And I would say this, if you know your place, if you can find your niche in life, if you can find what you can offer society, not just for your family, but something that would really do something for your fellow man, then, and you're confident in that, then you realize that there's a role that everyone can play, including men. You're not victimized, you're empowered, because you know that this is your niche, this is your gift to society, and you feel like your life, you've left your mark somehow. You've left your mark, not just for you, but whoever's looking up to you.
Something that I think is really important to pull out of this interview is this idea that Love talks about with leaving your mark and representation. Just as mentioned by her daughter, representation matters, especially for Black women to see themselves reflected in the media that's all around them today. As I record this podcast, some recent news came out that for the first time in history, Miss America, Miss USA, Miss Teen USA, and Miss Universe are all Black women. And they are Black women in various shades, hair textures, and types that can stand as a testament to the beauty that Black women hold. This is crucial because it's important that Black women can see themselves reflected just as every other racial group, class group, economic group can see themselves in media. It is commonly said that Black women are the most unprotected class of human beings on this planet. It is because so often we discredit them, underwrite their success, or make them feel like they are less than. I bring up this example of Miss America, Miss Universe, Miss Teen USA, and Miss USA because it applies directly to Love. Before I show anything about her being a Republican or being a Black woman Republican, I think it's important that we highlight that she is a Black woman pioneering in political leadership. And whether you agree with her politics, her stances, who she supports, how she thinks this country needs to be better, she is working to provide a perspective that is so often left out, especially in the Republican Party. On one hand, we can see this as tokenized leadership, in which she takes this position so that the Republican Party can say, okay, fine, everyone shut up, we have a Black woman in office. But no, I think this means so much more because there's this woman who's doing everything that she can to stand for what she believes in. And I think that's so important to represent, especially as she has these daughters and children she's raising, but also in the communities that she's going into. Utah does not have a large Black population and is majority Mormon. And for her to come into these communities and represent them and provide a voice, I think is a crucial conversation that we have. Now, as we transition, we're going to take a look at an interview that Mia Love did with the woman of the all-woman talk show, The View. In this interview, the woman of The View and Love get into interesting conversations about how it is to be a Republican in the era of a Trump presidency.
Table. I'm a mayor. Definitely I have realized that the best solutions are found at the most local level. When you're making decisions from whether it's the White House or even in Washington, less people have a voice. And so you have got to, limited government to me doesn't mean you cut everything. Limited government means that everything's applied at the appropriate level.
Let me
and
ask
I could
you this.
Do more people more as a mayor trying to take care if I had all of the resources as a mayor as opposed to making decisions for
Let me ask you this.
In Washington.
You said during your concession speech, and I don't have it verbatim, but that Republicans must embrace minorities in order to sort of increase the diversity of the Republican Party. And right. You mentioned that Republicans fail to take minorities into their hearts and their homes. Mm-hmm. And it almost seemed like a revelation to you. And I just ask you, because as a Black Republican, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me when you have a Republican Party that's, you know, supporting a president who was a birther, Central Park Five, DOJ settlement, not letting Black people rent. You're a Haitian American.
Yeah.
He called
I wish I called him out for that.
Why were you so surprised by that?
Well, let me we're not going to let Democrats off the hook because I was mm-hmm. actually targeted by Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I need to say this. They targeted mm-hmm. me because I was because I am a Black female Republican,
mm-hmm.
and they replaced me with a middle-aged white male in the state of Utah.
Well, the voters
So there did. There was a whole lot of money in an R+13 district that mm-hmm. went to take me out. Look at Carlos Curbelo. They tried to get rid of every single diversity that they possibly could. And to me, diversity on the left side is good for them if you think the same way they do.
Wow, Love leaves a lot to dissect in this portion of the interview. And I think a good place to start is this idea of conservative principles and how they align with the Republican Party. As Love mentioned, she thinks the best way to attack problems is to look at local level solutions. And this gets into the Republican Party's idea of limited government. And Love points out that she thinks limited government is the best solution, and why she is a Republican is because limited government puts the voice back in the hands of the people and gives them the opportunity to have their own hand in shaping and crafting the legislation that's going to impact them. On the other side of the spectrum are liberal policies that the Democratic Party has adopted, in which they have a more hands-on approach to solving problems through things like welfare programs. And as mentioned before with sort of the news with that black woman in the pageant world, I think it's also important in current events to point out how the Trump administration has put new regulations and rules on food stamps, and it's going to result in 700,000 people not qualifying. And this brings up this question of how Love can be a black woman Republican, because she's a mother, and she's a mother of three. And on one hand, this idea of her being a black woman Republican is sort of wrong on our parts, because it based on this premise of woman motherhood and me thinking, like, if you're a mother, how could you do this? And me attaching womanhood to motherhood, and that's a discussion we could have at another time and how we do this naturally. But the fact that Love is a mother, and this does in some way go to impact how she views the world, how can she put forth policies that go against helping out other mothers is a question that we have to come to grapple with. And there was a portion of this section of the interview where a woman on The View, she's also a black woman, she brings up Love's concession speech, and she's confused on how Love can be a black Republican woman. And Love sort of brings up this idea of how the left's, yes, they have diversity on this face value, and that is true, but she thinks that diversity of left only matters if you think the same way as the political elites. And I think this is also another discussion that we can look and get into in terms of when we put black women in roles of political leadership, how much can they do? How much can they accomplish? Looking at the careers of other prominent black figures, sometimes they're put into roles that don't fit what they want to do or what they want to accomplish. Take a look at Shirley Chisholm and when she got into Congress, and how she was assigned to a committee that had nothing to do with what would impact her community. And sort of, yes, on one hand, she was in the freshman class, and a lot of times Congress works on this basis of sort of seniority and them getting privileged. But at the same time, she's a black woman in a community, the first to do what she's doing, a trailblazer, and you put her to a committee that has nothing to do with the policies that she wants to put in place, the policies that she wants to run on. And so I think it is an important conversation that we have. And Brown, looking at black woman leadership in general across party lines and seeing, when black women get to leadership, how much can they actually do when they're the only one in the room? And this is especially salient in the career of Love, who is the only black woman Republican in Congress. And she joined the Black Caucus for Congress People, which is a collective that works to help push the initiative of black people. And she joined this legislation. And she's the only black Republican in that position. And a bit later, we're going to get into how this made her feel and why she initially went into the Black Caucus and what she got out of it. But I think we have to keep this in mind, that she is the first and only in a lot of spaces she's entering. So when we think about her career, I want us to think about this idea of the burden of being first and what she has to carry. And before we move forward to other parts of Love's political leadership, I think another portion of this interview that she did with The View is really important, and it gives her response on why she supports conservative policies on welfare programs.
To me, this is about not following a person to define yourself as a Republican or as a Democrat. I am defined by my principles, and I'm defined by the platform. And I think that that's what we need to look away from, because there are communities that I really care about. I believe that the policies, the conservative policies work. They work for black communities. They lift people, give people as many opportunities as possible.
How?
They don't keep people trapped.
How do they do that?
I think that when you go out and you're doing everything you can to make sure that people have jobs, that they have work, work, that they are, we're keeping families together.
The Democrats don't do that?
I don't believe that the policies are the same. I do not believe that the policies work. I believe, well, look at, let's look at the welfare policies.
Leg up. Gives people a leg up.
So, but it also disincentivizes
people. There are many more white people on welfare than black people.
Hang on a second. Hang on one second. If imagine you're a single mom and you're trying to get that manager position, you lose everything, every single help that you have. There is no bridge. We're incentivizing bad behavior and punishing good behavior. So I think what we need
you
to do
you lose
is
your welfare status?
You lose all of it. So you're disincentivized from getting a bigger job, getting a better job.
That's not an African American issue, though.
I would say, but there are a lot of people that are in the minority communities that are feeling that.
Some important things to take away from that clip is how love wants to be defined by her principles and not by her political affiliation. And I think that's an important distinction that we make as we look at her career, because on one hand, we can look and be critical of her affiliation with the Republican Party, but on the other hand, we also have to recognize how she talks about growing up in an immigrant household and how that impacts her career and the path that she's taken to political leadership. And when you look at all the problems she sees in our country, she looks at an economic approach to progress because her parents came here with just $10 and they made a way for themselves. So she sees all the benefits that come with being America come when you start with giving people economic prosperity and giving them that space to grow economically and allowing everything else to fall in place. And it sort of explains why she is a member of the Republican Party, because it is the party that sort of spearheads the economy talk that we have a lot of times. And a lot of times when we think of the Republican Party, we think of policies that are hands-off and economic-driven versus the Democratic Party that has a lot of affiliation with social programs. And when you think of welfare, you think of them protecting it. And I think that's clearly seen in how in Obama's administration, he's being defined by Obamacare and those kind of social programs versus Trump, who's taking a more stance on tax cuts for Republicans. And so I think when you just think of the parties, even on the presidential level, and as well as how it trickles down into Congress, we can see that those are distinct differences in the parties, and they just show how people have different visions for America. And for Love, she thinks incentivizing hard work is the way to go, and it sort of fits this mentality of pull yourself up by the bootstraps that is often put into place. And on one hand, I'm saying she's falling for this, but on the other hand, I think she's had a front row seat to seeing that these policies do work. And so while I am critical of her being a Republican and a black woman, I also have to recognize that her experience in America as an immigrant and watching her immigrant family make their way up in America has heavily shifted her career. And I think that's an important discussion that we should keep in mind as we think about black women in political leadership in general. And so next, we're going to jump into a clip that Love dated with the Jimmy Rex Show, where she discusses how she initially got into politics.
Congresswoman, did you know when you were young, I mean, what was Mia Love like as a child? Were you always into the political sphere?
No, absolutely not. This is not, you know, this is certainly not for the faint of heart, and certainly not something I said I wanted to do when I grow up. You know, I had other thoughts. My background is in marketing. I actually have a fine arts degree.
Yeah, so you have musical theater, right?
Yes, and I have a bachelor in fine arts, and, you know, that has led me to do a lot of product marketing. It's not enough for a KitchenAid to just kind of function well, but it's got to look really good too. And so there are a lot of different things that are out there in terms of marketing products. But I had an issue, or we were having an issue in a community that we lived in, where my husband and I first bought our home. That started with a total infestation of mosquitoes, and of course I couldn't have that, so we had to go in and get it fixed. And then after that, it was just like, well, we're kind of isolated over here in Saratoga Springs. Mia, since you got this done, you should go and run for city council and represent us. And so I heard that voice in the back of my head where my dad said, hey, you're not going to be a burden to society, you're going to give back. And so I decided I was going to run for city council, and started looking at some of the potential pitfalls that our city could have. We were all agriculture. There was no sense of trying to move towards a city that can grow and thrive on its own and that could be sustainable. And so really, the housing market crashed. The city was living on just impact fees and different things like that, and we thought this is just not going to be sustainable. So
I ran for mayor and we got our city on track.
And that was in 2010, right?
I was in, yeah. And we got to the point where our property tax paid for nothing but public safety.
Wow.
When I asked myself these questions, is it affordable? Is it sustainable? Is it my job? It came to lead to some really good policies. And I think that if we did that in Washington, is it affordable? Is it sustainable? Is it our job? And that would be the test for if we fight for or push for legislation, then we would be in a much better place, I think, when it comes, especially when it comes to our debt.
Mm.
Something that I think is interesting that Love touches on is this idea that I've seen throughout the course, Black Women in Political Leadership, and that is this idea of accidental leadership and accidental activism, and how a lot of times women, they don't plan on being in public service, but feeling as they've been called to do so, and feeling like they have seen problems and know they need to be solved, and knowing that they have what it is in them to solve them. And something that was touched on in the intro to this podcast is this confidence gap, and I think it's a question we should be having ourselves is, for one, why don't women see themselves as able to enter these roles in public sector when they clearly have shown throughout the history that they have the ideas to solve them and they have the work ethic and mentality to get things done in office? But why isn't this something that they aspire to, or why isn't the idea of public service in their dreams? I think is an important question to ask, because it's something we see in various political figures. If you look at the political career of Beverly Manley, for example, she sort of also had this career that was with accidental activism, and now she was just working in media and she met Michael Manley, and this sort of took her career to a different path and different place, but she still got into this role as a first lady and took it to places that are unimaginable and did things that were so impactful for our communities because she had the ideas and knew what needed to be done for communities. And going back to Love, she did the exact same thing. It started off as an infestation in her house, and somehow her having termites turned into her having a career as the first Black Republican woman elected to Congress. And I think that is so powerful for everyone to witness, and this idea that we should be looking at is how people get into leadership. And I think this is also something we should be thinking about on a larger scale in terms of how politics operate. Because a lot of times in politics, when you look at campaigns and political leaders, they're thinking about how can I get reelected or how can I get elected in the first place. So everything they do is about how will this look on my resume? You know, when I'm in college, what organization should I be a part of that are going to help me get into this law school? And when I'm in this law school, what do I need to be a part of so that I can get to this firm? And I think when you look at the careers of a lot of political leaders that are men, they have these clear paths of going into public service that are already predestined. But for one, we don't have a lot of women to look at, but on another hand, a lot of Black women to look at and see how they are able to forge their paths. And when people are getting into public office and public service, not for the idea of to serve their communities, but for the idea of just continually getting reelected, I think we have to be critical of our current political system and how it functions and operates, and that as soon as you get in as a congressperson, 2 years later, you have to think about, okay, how am I going to get reelected? What do I have to do now that's going to help? And so a lot of times people aren't even helping communities that need to be helped. They're helping communities of voters. And instead of this idea of mobilizing people and getting everyone to where they need to be, we're activating certain bases so that they can propel themselves. And I think that's a hard thing to grapple with, because if we're only making legislation in terms of success to get reelected, how do we ever truly serve all communities? And so I think for Love to go from this career path of councilwoman to mayor to congresswoman, she's seen at so many local levels what needs to be done to help communities. And I think that's very powerful, because she also brings up this point about when she's always making legislation, she always thought about, is it affordable? Is it sustainable? And is it my job? And I think she brings up how if we apply this train of thought to Washington, a lot more can be done for communities. And on one hand, I think that when we put in place legislation, we have to think, I think making things simple in terms of legislation is a bit difficult because your impact is not going to be simple. And I think a lot of times congresspeople are making legislation that won't even impact them, or they're being lenient on legislation that won't impact them. So when you think about, let's go for example, Trump's tax plan and how that's going to benefit him and businessmen alike with the tax cuts, or how you have these large corporations that aren't being taxed. And so a lot of times when Congress people get into places of authority, they're making legislation that only benefits them. And so when we think about this idea of making things affordable and sustainable, or is it my job? I think as a congressperson, it is your job to be caring for your community in every capacity that you can think of. And so I don't think there's a limit on that in a sense. And so this idea of affordability, I think that's such a touchy subject because on one hand, who gets to make the decision about what's quote-unquote affordable when we're spending trillions of dollars on military when we could be putting those resources into something else in terms of these social welfare problems that we can't afford or healthcare, which we think that we can't afford, you know. America is like one of the only developed countries that doesn't have a robust system for healthcare. And if you look at other countries, they have universal healthcare and what that's doing for communities. And I think it's something we have to be very critical and think about because it's really important. And so next we're going to get into a talk that Mia Love did for Utah Women in Leadership Project. And the Leadership Project put on a monthly seminar called She Talk Utah. And Love spoke at this conference. And here she describes how she views why women should enter politics, as well as some lessons that she's learned along her way in her career of becoming a political leader.
I learn every day. I think it's important to learn from the people who have passed before us. There was one time I was asked to go to the University of Chicago to speak to Black aspiring attorneys. University of Chicago. Now, you may all know, it's not a secret. Google it. Wikipedia has it. I'm Republican. We're not going to talk about the nominees or the presidential candidate. No, I'm focusing on home, right? So, going to the University of Chicago was, you know, Barack Obama's stomping ground, okay? And everyone said, Mia, don't go. They're going to eat you alive. Just don't do it. And I said, what is the point? Why would I not do that? Put yourself in uncomfortable situations. So I said, I am going. And I sat and I told these students about my life. And I wanted to make sure I was as sincere as possible. I told them my story. And this one woman stood up and she said, she was not happy. She said, I don't understand how you can be Black, female, LDS, Republican, living in Utah, in today's America. Okay, make me sound like Bigfoot, right? Right? And I confidently looked her in the eye and I said, I am all of these things because I refuse to fit this mold that society says I have to fit into. Imagine if Martin Luther King decided to take that government said he was a second-class citizen, we wouldn't be here today. My job is not to tell you to believe what I believe in. It's to preserve the thoughts and the ideas that you have for yourself. Preserve the opportunities for you to think for yourself, for you to become whoever you want to be, for you to be as ordinary or as extraordinary as you choose to be. That's what I'm trying to do here. There's a lesson to learn from that. Share. As a leader, you have to go out and you have to share the stories and learn from other people that came before you. There's a reason why I'm holding this microphone. Right? I learned from the leaders before me. So, why do we run? Why should we lead? Let's ask that. Why should we put ourselves in uncomfortable situations? I believe that there's going to be a time and a place where people are going to look back at the destinational decisions that we make today, where we're going to be given opportunities to do something special and specific to our talents. I'm certain that decades from now, a history book will contain all of the chapters of the events of today. And we're going to ask ourselves, what did we do? I want you to know that today is not the time to cower in a corner. Today is not the time to lose your courage. Now more than ever, we need women, young ladies, Americans to step up. Because if you don't, someone else will do it for you. If you are not making your voice heard, if you are not the authors of history, someone will write it in for you. And let me be very clear about this. It's going to be someone inferior to you doing it for you. Because there is no one that knows more about your life than you do. Why do I run?
because I had a front row seat to seeing two people come into a country, work their butts off with nothing but a high school degree, teach a young lady who became the first black female Republican in the House of Representatives.
I think those words from Mia are a great place to end because she encapsulates, I think, a huge portion of her career, which is this idea of not fitting into a mold. And in fact, she is creating her own mold because she is pioneering in a space where many find it hard to get into and many find it hard to stay. And she also lost her election in 2008. She was elected in 2014, and so she served for two terms. And early in the clip that I showed, she talked about how she felt like it was wrong for her to get out of office and to be replaced by a white man. And I think on some level, her loss was based on just simply the Democrats trying to get a majority and this idea of a blue wave. And on another hand, I think she brings up this point of how do you continue to progress forward? And I think she does that sort of implicitly. She obviously doesn't explicitly say it, but I think implicitly she's trying to bring up how do you go from her in this idea of pushing boundaries and going forward to getting a candidate who's sort of establishment from the Democratic Party. And I think it's sort of when we think about black people, but in this case black women in political leadership, I think looking at their career during that time is important, but looking at what happens after is also important. When you look at the career of, let's say, Barack Obama, and many people see his election as this revolutionary moment, but after he gets out of office, look who he's replaced with. And on one hand, you look at this idea of how, okay, it's natural for, after a couple of terms, a new party to get into office. But on one hand, was Donald Trump's election reactionary? You know, is he elected as president because America's like, okay, we had this black president and we're never going to allow that to happen again. And sort of this Trump tapping into these voices that feel like they've been silenced. And so when we look at the success of black women, we also have to look at what comes after their story or their narrative. And not saying that their narrative ever ends, but when we think about Mia Love as the first black Republican woman in office, something that a lot of people are going to focus on is what she did while in office. But I think we need to look at also what happens after and what that means for society. And I think looking at recent news and recent headlines, Kamala Harris also dropped out of the run for president. And I think for so many people, it's this mixed emotions because there's this idea presented that, you know, she's a cop and her history as a prosecutor made her not the candidate for the people. But when you look at who's left in the race, I think it's really hard to figure out whether it was justified for her to be out of the run, because you look at Joe Biden, who's said a lot of things and done a lot in his time in office that many see as problematic. And on one of the debates, he was equating being black with being poor. And I think when you look at incidents like that, or you look at Pete Buttigieg and how he has literally less to no black support in some of the early primary states, and how the black voice is being left out by so many other candidates, and we're sort of being so forgotten. But you had a woman who was sort of, Kamala Harris was in a way trying to usher in this new era of talking about and bringing a voice for black women. So on one hand, she may not have had all the policies that back them up, but I think when we look at black women in political leadership and we look at their careers, we have to sort of look at it from a broader perspective, I think we should be doing, because for them to even get there was a lot. So whether her policies don't match what you believe in and what you want to support, to know that what she had to go through to get where she is in office, I think it should stand up as a testament to what she can get done if she were president, and her strength and her promise and her hard work. I think for any black woman to rise and political relevance means they've had to put in a lot of work, because it takes a lot of more work for black women to advance. And bringing this idea back to Love, I think when we have campaigns that are all about winning, it makes it really hard to know who's really in it for the people. And she also brings up this point about writing history for yourself and to make your voice heard. And I think as I wrap up this podcast and I sit with all of the clips and my own thoughts, I'm trying to figure out what does her run in Congress mean? What does it reflect? Is it this idea of progression, or is this the idea of us consistently rejecting messages? And I think a lot of times a lot of politics is reactionary. And so I'm trying to see, what does love's position as a congresswoman, what does that mean? And where do we go forward? And Love said in a lot of her clips, as well as while I was doing research, that she thinks a huge problem with the Republican Party is their leadership as being transactional, and how she says she's a leader that goes far beyond transactional. And it's not just about what can you do for me. It's about what we can do for each other, and this sort of reciprocal relationship, and it being continuous and cyclical. And it was interesting because when Love lost the election, President Donald Trump came out and said, Mia Love lost because she gave me no love. And it was sort of like, you have this woman who got into office, and it was sort of bringing in a new voice that had never been brought in. But the moment that she wasn't useful for Trump, she wasn't seen as valuable, and she wasn't seen as someone to support. And so I think whatever we think about Love's career and her path to national prominence, her leadership style as being one that's far beyond transactional, I think, is something that we could take away as something that every person in any party can think about. Is sort of, sometimes we think of the citizens and the people in Congress as these two separate entities, but they really should be one. And the whole purpose of the House of Representatives is supposed to be the branch of government that's closer to the people, you know, versus a senator that's statewide or the president that's nationwide. You know, your House of Representatives is from your district, and they're supposed to represent you and reflect you. And so when people get into office, I think it's an important discussion that we should be have. And I think the most important thing we should leave off with is something that we began with, and it's this idea of the burden of being first, and how it presents many questions for the person that is first, and what do you do now, as well as the person and the people that are watching the person being first. But as usual, where the universe tries to put question marks, we see Black women in political leadership putting periods, etching their spaces into history forever. And let us make no mistake, Mia Love is no exception. Thank you.